everyone, and welcome back to the MBL Pocket Podcast. It's really great to have you with me today, and thanks for coming back or even coming here for the first time. This is the real Bob Ross inspired episode. It's just me. It's going to be real muted, real slowed down, nice and easy. You can listen to it when you're on the bus or on the train or doing chores around the house. We're not going to get too high. We're not going to get too low. We're just going to sit nice in the middle, and I'm going to talk about stuff. Bit of news going on, but the crux of this whole thing is going to be about Liam Santamaria's 21 questions for MBL 21. This article is available on mbl.com.au. I really enjoyed this article. I love when articles ask questions rather than posing really specific answers. It was a really thoughtful piece, and you know, Liam's great at this sort of stuff. He asks questions that he often doesn't give his own answers to, which is, oh, I suppose a little frustrating, but not. But it's about inspiring thought, and he certainly did that with me, and that's why I felt compelled to come up with my own answers to them and do them here. Quickly, though, a little bit of news. The Jack Jumpers have a new coach, Scott Roth. Am I right in saying that? Scott, yeah. I think we're all a little bit surprised by this. Not that he's a bad hire or a bad coach or anything. I just want to check it is. Scott Roth, I'm just jumping on the internet now. I think, sadly, it does show that there's even more dirt on the grave of, that's a bit much, you know, on the coffins of Rob Beveridge and Joe Wright. You know, I think if they weren't candidates for this, they haven't been chosen, and, you know, that is what it is. The new schedule has come out for the upcoming season. It's changed from January 10 to a whole bunch of dates. I'm not going to go through them, even though I'm very pleased, but like everything this year, plans may as well be written on an Etch-a-Sketch. And my advice to people, and I said this to someone on Twitter, and I'm sorry I've forgotten this Twitter's name, but stay liquid, loosey-goosey, you know. Like Bruce Lee says, be shapeless, like water, be ready for change, you know. Change is good, be ready to accept it. All right, well, let's jump into the 21 questions that Liam Santamaria poses in his article. And let's start with number one. His question, will United go undefeated? And my answer, like a lot of people, is no. And I don't think we need to go into great detail about this. No team has ever done it. And I don't think any team ever will. And I certainly don't think this United team will be the exception. Question two, who will be the best next star? Now, the candidates, before we go into this question in detail, is Jessup, Luzada, Giddy, and Mojave King. The question really depends upon the definition of the question itself. What is best? And I define best as biggest contributor to winning games. And for that reason, I agree with Liam on this one. I think it'll be Didi Luzada. He's going to start. He's going to play big minutes. You look at sort of who's in his rotational wheelhouse. You've got Casper Ware. He's going to play big minutes. Sean Bruce, Brad Newley, Vasiljevic, Glover. They're all going to be sharing about 120 minutes at the 1, 2, and the 3. I know Luzada doesn't play the 1 so much, but he's still going to be, you know, Bruce plays the 2 a little bit because there's talk of Casper Ware and Bruce playing together, and Bruce is obviously going to, if he's playing at the 2, he's going to intrude upon those minutes a bit. But there's still 120 between all those guys. And Luzada is arguably the third best player on this list. I think Casper Ware is obviously the best. I think Bruce, Newley, and he are in that conversation. So if he's, let's say he is the third best, that means he's going to get the lion's share of 120 minutes. And when you play that many minutes, you're going to get some good stats and be a contributor. And I think he's older than those other guys. He does a bit more than the other guys on this list. Jessup, pure shooter, I really like him. But he's contending with Deng Adel, a direct person in his spot who's a trouble to take his minutes. Then the next one is, if your definition of best next star, because the deal with the next star's idea is to improve your draft stock. You know, that's also a definition of being a good next star. So who's the best next star in terms of who's going to take that opportunity as a next star to really improve their draft stock? My answer is Josh Giddy for two reasons. One, because simply, well, Mojave King's listed at 24 on the NBADraftRoom.com mock drafts, whereas Giddy's 31. So Giddy's got more room to move, and best is an improvement. So that's one answer. But also, I think Adelaide are going to be the worst team. I think Cairns have got Mike Kelly as coach, and they're looking to win the championship. Adelaide, I think, are going to finish bottom. so there's more wiggle room for Giddy, and they seem to be really pushing their season through Giddy. Cairns seem to have Mojave King as more of an accessory to their winning, whereas Adelaide seem pretty resigned to play the we're building card, and as a result, play him major minutes, or at least decent minutes, or at the very least, better minutes than Mojave King. So they're my answers to that question. Question number three from Liam Santa Maria's Expect the Unexpected for NBL 20, which on nbl.com.au. Third question, will Casper Ware bounce back? My answer to this straight up is yes, with an if. And it's really important to dissect this question again. For all his poor shooting, Casper Ware was still the second best player on a grand final team behind Jayshon Tate, who's now in the NBA on a 3-year deal. You know, you don't sneeze at those sorts of things. And then secondly, really important with this question is, really important with this question, it's important, why was he bad in the first place? That's, you know, you can't just look at the future. You have to look at his past. Why was Casper Ware poor last year? And I've never seen a really good answer to this question. I have my own answer, and I'll give it to you now. I think two things were the result, were the cause of his poor season. Firstly, I think the strategy of the Kings last season, which was to shoot more three-pointers. On any pick-and-roll situation where the defender goes under, you shoot it. You cast it up. And I have stats to kind of back this up. Casper Ware shot 315 three-point attempts last season, up from 283. So what's that an increase of? Let's say 30, over 30. Doesn't sound like a lot. It's only, you know, one a game or so, because they played 34 games last year. But let's not forget that he shot 315, up from 283, in 137 less minutes. That's the equivalent of 3.5 total games. So when you factor in, if you factor in the minutes thing, Casper Ware's three-point attempts were through the roof. The second reason I think he had a bad year was the kindergarten creche-like substitutions. The kindergarten creche-like substitutions of Will Weaver. It was more egalitarian than the French Revolution. You know, it was very, everyone got a turn, everyone played nice. I'm trying to get to the NBA here. My objective is not to win this championship so much. It's to, you know, everybody's happy. Good reference, off I go. And I think that interrupted the junkyard run all day style of Casper Ware, who's a Drew League guy, who's a nutty, gritty, ground and pound type point guard. I think he wanted to, you know, there are some horses that run for a sprint and there are some horses that run long distance. I think he's kind of both, but if he's one or the other, he's more the latter. I think he's more of a long running player. And why I came back to the answer of yes with an if is the signing of Tom Vidanovic. It does worry me, and I'll tell you why. They signed Vidanovic over the better player in Venki Joyce. And by all accounts, turned down Venki Joyce for Vidanovic. And I think that indicates that the Kings are going to re-up with that shoot the long ball whenever open philosophy. And that style's not going to work for Casper Ware. And nor will Weaver's substitution patterns. And, you know, we have Adam Ford come in, who's an assistant coach. Is he going to coach like every assistant coach in their first year, which is, again, too polite, too nice, not willing to cull his lineup to the best? We see it all the time. We saw it last year with Matt Flynn, and we'll see it again in the future, I'm sure. Hopefully, Adam Ford can snap right quick and isolate who his best players are and play them the right amount of minutes. It's a really tough thing to do, but I hope he can do it. So that's my yes with an if for Casper Ware. I have a lot of faith in Casper Ware, and I really like him. Number four from Liam Santa Maria. Can Adelaide's big men coexist? My answer is no. And, you know, Liam Santa Maria writes about, especially defensively, how's that going to work? That's a huge question. And I think the other question is, where's the bite? You know, you've got Daniel Johnson, who doesn't crack a smile nor a frown at any point. And then Isaac Humphries, who, you know, rather than bite, he's more likely to sing at you. You know, who was that Mortal Kombat character who used to scream and sing at people in attack? I don't know. But, you know, Isaac Humphries, you know, I don't think he's got that bite. I didn't see it when he was with Sydney, and I haven't watched any of his G League games, only highlights. And I didn't see that real dogged, style in him. And in a season like what the NBL is coming into, yeah, that's going to be absolutely critical. Perth, Sydney and Cairns were the best teams last season. Think about who was on the floor for those teams in winning time. For Perth, it wasn't Plumlee. For Sydney, it wasn't Bogut. And for Cairns, it was Oliver at the five, who's, you know, a smaller five. The 36ers now have two bigs who can't move their puppies. Are they going to play them both in crunch time? In a basketball world, and the NBL's a part of it, that's moving away from lumbering bigs? I don't know. I don't like it. And that's why I say no. Question five from Liam Santa Maria. Will Kouatnoy make the leap? My answer is yes. He's held, when healthy, he was a double-digit scorer, and then he got hurt, and his role changed. And if you've listened to my interview with Jamie Lachlan, the assistant coach, yeah, it wasn't just the injury. It wasn't just the role change. It was everything. And then the pressure of that NBA draft looming. So I have huge faith in Kouatnoy. I think he's a good player. I think he's long, he's length. I think he's going to be a real contributor to winning basketball. And yeah, he can shoot it a little bit. He can attack a little bit. I think he's going to be hungry. I think he's the type of guy who'll take a hit to the mouth in a good way. You know, that not getting drafted, I mean. He'll take that, and instead of dropping his head like other players have, I think he'll do the opposite. Huge believer in that guy, and I wish him well. Question six. Which new import will blow up? I didn't actually read San Maria's answer to this one. I'll quickly just go to the article. You can hear the clicking of the mouse. He hasn't numbered these. He's gone with the Vic Law of Brisbane. I disagree. I'm going to go with Jarrell Martin of the Sydney Kings. 26 years old, NBA pedigree. So, you know, nice age to be a real player, NBA pedigree. And besides, who's going to take his minutes other than Adam Ford? You know, Kickett's hurt. If you read the article Santa Maria put out about the Vidanovic signing, Kickett's hurt. Jordan Hunter's not ready. Craig Moller's a different spot, but, you know, contended to take his minutes. And then Vidanovic. I don't think there's any other bigs. This guy's going to play 40 minutes if he can. And when you play minutes, you get stats and hopefully play well. And I think he's just going to be a real face-up scorer. I really like him. And that is my answer. I think it's not only about aptitude, it's about circumstance. And Jarrell Martin, I think, kind of has a combination of both, but his circumstances are much greater than the others. But Vic Law's a good answer too. Question seven from Liam Santa Maria. Can Cam Bairstow stay healthy? My answer, no. He's 30. He's just missed time at every stop he's ever made. And at some point, you are what you are. You just are what you are. And I think he's hurt. And he's already hurt in the preseason. And when this season, the condensed schedule, it doesn't work in his favor in the first place. He's hurt already. Gorgon's trainings are tough. You know, you're stacking up all this evidence against him. And, you know, it's sad because he's a good player. But, you know, if you're being cutthroat, you know, you don't want to be fooled again. I put the over-under of the percentage of the season he plays at 60%. And if you're a betting person, or even if you're just a person who likes to game theory, would you tag the over on that? Have you got any proof that he could do that in the past? Yeah, that's why I say no. Question eight. Will Kiefer Sykes be better than John Robertson? What a great question. My answer is no. Southeast Melbourne are a very divisive team in a good way. And I've said this before, but I'll gladly say it again. If you look at Southeast Melbourne's season last year, I think Tommy Greer and that team have wrongly assessed where their failings were. And I think Felix von Hoff went about, and Pete Hawley spoke about this on their podcast, the Trash Talk podcast, which was great. Go and listen for sure, or watch. They lacked defense. And I don't think they've done much to address that with Sykes, especially. I don't see how Sykes is an upgrade over Robertson. I think he's not the floor general or the defensive upgrade on Robertson, right? His strength is scoring and attacking the basket, which is great. That's what he was heralded for in China. Sykes, I read an article, Sykes was described as the James Harden of China by Chris Sheridan, who's covered the NBA and alike for a long time. And I don't, if they were going, well, we want to improve defensively and we want to get a, you know, set up point guard to help the likes of Tarangi and Glidden and others, Sykes would not be at first choice. If you wanted a point guard who's a super aggressive scoring point guard, he's your guy. And to get more scoring at the hoop, which he will do over Robertson, but Robertson was a freak shooter. I think we're having the same conversation with John Robertson that people are having with Steph Curry now, where they're like, oh, that team's terrible and he can't carry a team. And I think it's like, no, the game kind of favors small guards now. You know, you look at the NBA, and I hate to talk about the NBA with the NBL context, but even the NBL, you look at the success of Casper Ware and Cotton. But the game favors small guards, and as a result, you know, Lillard, Curry, Westbrook, John Wall to a lesser extent, you know, a whole bunch of guards have really excelled because, you know, there's no hand checking and blah, blah, blah. So for that reason, no, I don't think he's an upgrade on John Robertson. I thought, you know, they're going to play through Creek a lot in the quarter court, and he's going to be your attacker and passer. And I think with John Robertson, he creates that much space. He was a freak shooter and is a freak shooter in Europe. He has backed it up. He's in Spain. He's coming off the bench. His shooting numbers are, again, ridiculous. And I just think that skill is, in the modern basketball, in the modern NBL, is kind of underrated. But going back to Sykes, what's interesting is he has the same agent as Cotton, Adam Pensack. And Pensack also has Cotton. He has Colton Iverson. And I think he did have Lamar Patterson, but not anymore. Patterson's change agent, which is strange. Why I say this is because, you know, Sykes' numbers with Panathinaikos were poor, but they did want him back on a month-long contract. But Sykes wanted a longer deal, and that's why he went to China. And seemingly wasn't eager to play in Europe after being shafted out of money in Italy, and this is why he changed his agent to Pensack from Beyond Athlete Management, who have, just by the by, Jayshon Tate, but also, hey, Ben Moore, also of the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. Thus, NBL. If you're after dependable money, maybe not as much, but certainly dependably, you know, paid money, the NBL is the league for you. You know, I think with, as well, you know, Creek wants the ball. I think Glidden's fragile. Tarangi too, if you look at their years, or Tarangi, pardon me. There's a lot of coddling needed on this team, and he's a score first one. And if you're going to make him be a distributor, you're going against the grain of who he is. And whenever you try to change a person, any woman listening, hello ladies, can attest to the fact that you can't change someone. You can only sort of grow with their habits. And I think that's why I don't think Kiefer Sykes is what's gone on. And I think also with South East Melbourne, I've said this before, but in assessing the year last year, injuries cannot be overstated. That injury to Crete killed them. That injury to Wesley killed them. But both him coming out and him coming back in, it was just a weird situation. So I think they've misassessed their NBL 20. Moving on though. Question 9 from Liam Santa Maria. Is Craig Moller ready? The question would be ready for what? And if the question is to be the starter on a finals bound NBL team, my answer is no. The game's a little bit too predictable. We saw, you know, sort of a similar to Dane Pinot in that way. Great energy, good rebounder, but no outside shot at a fractionally smaller position. Yeah, it just means you can guard him a little too easily. I like Craig Moller. I really like him as off the bench. But as a starter, that's a lot. That's a lot for Craig Moller. And I think too much, sadly for him. Question 10. Will Nathan Sobey play the 2? Really interesting question. And my answer is no. Again, Lemanis is a chop wood and carry coach. And this word's got a negative connotation, but I'm going to say stubborn. You know, sometimes he's he doesn't make the changes when needed. That's a bit cruel, actually. You know, Magne did get put in the starting lineup and a few things. Still, I'm going to stay with it. Also, the reason why I say this is they recruited 2 players in Johnson, Orlando Johnson, and Vic Law to replace Braun and Singler. They haven't gone out and got a point guard. Now, the answer to that would be, oh, but they've got the kid Weakness and, of course, Jason Gadee. I don't think that's an upgrade. I don't think if Jason Gadee is your starting point guard, I don't think that you're finals bound. And if Weakness is your starting point guard, I don't think you're finals bound either. I think he's too young. I think he's a good player, but I don't think he's ready to be a starting point guard and go up against Cotton and Ware and Sykes and McCarron and others. So he is their best option at the 1, amazingly. And if it's Cadiz there, I don't like their team either. Yeah, it's the same thing. If they were serious about him not playing the one and playing the two, they would have gone out and got a one. Imagine if they, I like their team much better if they had Sykes, Sobey, Law, Hodgson and Froehlich. I like that team better than what they've got, or Sykes or equivalent. And then Cadiz off the bench, bit of weakness. Well, their smalls are real troublesome there. But you know what I mean? I like that team better. I like it a lot better. So in answer to the question, will Sobey play the two? No. Question 11. We're just over halfway. Who gets a triple-double? Liam Santa Maria's answers were Giddy, Lamar Patterson, others. I didn't want to just copy him, so I want to give an answer. Not that I truly believe this, because I think it's probably going to be Giddy, because I think he's going to get space to do whatever he wants. But to give a alternate answer, I'm going to say Casper Ware. The points won't be an issue, nor the assists, just the rebounds. But I think Sydney's rebounding stocks have been so depleted with Cooks' injury and Bogut gone. There's going to be rebounds flying off that hoop. And as much as Ware's not a big player, he is an aggressive player. And I think if told, if the strategy is team rebounding, everybody go for it, get a back on a guy and then go for the ball. There's a lot of long shots in the NBL. And I think a lot of them are going to bounce to Casper Ware. And I think he's also the guy that will chase a triple-double. Not that he's a stat chaser, but he's a guy who works hard all the time he's on the court, whether that's scoring, whether that's assisting, whether that's rebounding. So my answer there is Casper Ware. Question 12, will the Wildcats three-peat? I think they will. A lot of people are down on this team, in particular because they've seemingly gotten worse. But, you know, every team's gotten worse. Sydney have got a lot worse. In arguably, in some positions, Melbourne have gotten worse. Cairns have gotten worse. They lost DJ Newball, you know. So the argument that, oh, this team's gotten worse at every position doesn't really, I don't believe that. But the fact that they have gotten worse as a roster is true, but so is everybody else. And, you know, you've only got to beat your competition. They're not playing the Houston Rockets or, you know, any other team. They're playing in the NBL. So that's there. And I think that Blanchfield's better than you think. I think he'll be actually quite a good replacement for Tarico White. I think the expectations will be realistic for him. But more the point with this question, I think basketball people in this country hate to admit it to themselves, but basketball is the most selfish team sport on the planet. Most selfish team sport on the planet. If a team has a great player, they're very likely to win. The NBA follows this pattern very, very closely. In the past 30 years, only really the Pistons, Mavericks, and Raptors from a couple of seasons ago have broken through the Jordan, Duncan, Shaq, Bryant, Curry, James, Mays. You look at those championships and there's basically the MVP or, you know, an NBA's top 25 player on those teams. Great players win this sport. The ball stops in one person's hand. It's not like there's two balls on the field. It's not like baseball where a batter can't pitch. You're not depending on other people. One player can do it all. It's a very selfish sport by nature. So therefore, and then you say, oh, well, that's the NBA and that's world removed. Good point. But I'd answer this. In the NBL, the team with the MVP wins the championship 35% of the time. And this number could be debatably higher if you sort of tinker with the Andrew Gaze 7 championships, in which, you know, he was a real benefactor of the way the MVP was done at that time, which was voting after every game. And not to say he wasn't a deserving MVP winner of those, but I think if it had been done by the press in a way that's more, that's not so much game focused, but on season focused. Anyway, I'm blabbering, but there's a podcast I did with Body about this called How Good Is Gaze? If you want to talk about that or listen to that, go on there. But nonetheless, the MVP wins the championship 35% of the time, or the team containing the MVP. 35% is a pretty good bet. That's a pretty good bet. The best odds in a casino is 49%, and that's red or black on the roulette wheel. Well, this has got 9 contingencies, 10 teams, and in the past, the league's had a lot more. And yet the team with the MVP wins 35% of the time. You know, you've got all these different variables, but the one outcome of 35%, that's pretty good odds. If I gave you $1 million and said I've got a 35% chance, you'll double it. It's not great. You wouldn't bet your life on it. But look at the alternatives. You know, would you bet your life on Melbourne United? Would you bet your life on Southeast Melbourne, Cairns, New Zealand? You know, for all Perth's faults, they've still got the MVP in Bryce Cotton and the best who's ever played in the NBL. He's still there. He will win the MVP if healthy. It's that simple. So that's my answer to that. But these two questions are kind of linked. Number 13, will the Wildcats make the finals? I think they will, but I think it's really a fair question to ask because it is really close. But I think ultimately if you fillet this question down to its most basic components, and if you consider that Melbourne, Cairns and New Zealand are locks, which I think is pretty fair, then their direct competition to just make the finals is Sydney and who? Southeast Melbourne? The Hawks? Adelaide, Brisbane? I don't think they're contenders. I think their competition then is Sydney, and they're better than Sydney. I think objectively better than Sydney now with Cooks out. So yeah, I think they make the finals. I don't think there's actually any worry of that, because I think the Wildcats are right on an even keel with the Breakers, who've got a lot of new and moving parts to work out, as well as, you know, those other teams, Cairns and Melbourne. If, you know, Cairns have had three imports who did a lot last year, and now they only have two. So they'll make the finals. I'm very confident of that. Also, let's not forget now, because people have said, oh, Mooney, well, I don't like Mooney. I haven't seen enough of Mooney. I don't know where people are watching. I've seen one of his games in college with Notre Dame. I have watched a little bit of him in the preseason, but, you know, if we're going off preseason, Harry Froehlich's the best big. You know, I'm not putting my money on that either. So I don't know where these people, you know, are so confident he's poor, because I'm not. But more the point, this is the most cutthroat organization in Australian sport. You don't get to the top by writing a whole lot of checks. If Mooney isn't good enough, you know, surprise, surprise, you know what's going to happen. They'll cut him and they'll bring in someone who is. I'm confident in Mooney, but I'm also extremely confident in the fact that if he's not, the Wildcats will cut him faster than wrapping paper at Christmas. And, you know, these are the Wildcats after all. They're cats. And mother cats will eat their young for five different reasons. Stillborn, birth defects, mercy, if they're threatened by a predator, and malnourishment. And I'm sorry to be graphic, but the Wildcats are no different from other cats. They will do what they need to do to win. You know, this is a team that voted to play through the COVID-19 pandemic in its early stages. This is a team that would vote to play through a zombie apocalypse. And I take my hat off to them, and I think it's great. Question number 14. When will Bryce Cotton become a citizen? He will become a citizen. And the answer is sometime during the early part of the season. If he hasn't already, this is the Wildcats. They're secretive. They're like MI5, Scotland Yard, the FBI, and every private dick all rolled into one. I wouldn't be surprised if he's a citizen already and they're keeping it to themselves to get a better deal. This is the Wildcats. Nothing is above them. Nothing is below them. And I like that. And when he does, the Wildcats will have an Uno card and a Joker that they can play, and it's over. I think when he becomes a citizen during the season, this season is over. They will bring in a third import. That is stacking the deck so far in your favor, you can't lose. I'd just be surprised, and I tell people, don't be surprised if it's not Miles Plumley, N-O-T, not Miles Plumley. I don't know if you'd look at that team and go, oh, if we had Plumley, we're a winner. I think if Mooney's good and he's going to play that small five, why they wouldn't look at, you know, getting another kind of shooter scorer, take the pressure off Cotton. That's something they'll reassess if and when it happens quarter to midway through the season. Question 15 from Liam Santa Maria's Expect the Unexpected. Will Dengadel win Best Defensive Player? DJ Newell won it last year. This award typically goes to a wing or a small, Bogut and Chris Dancy being the most quote-unquote recent exceptions. I think that goes back 10 or 12, 15 years. I think McCarron or Casper Ware might win this one, is my answer. Only because the Hawks may not win enough games for Dengadel. And I know Torrey Craig won it when the Brisbane Bullets were dead last, 10 wins. But it's hard to be a defensive player on a team that's losing a lot, which makes it a bit difficult for him. So that's my one sort of red flag with Dengadel. He's definitely got the aptitude. I just think maybe the circumstance around him voting and what might influence the people that vote for it if they're a losing side. Question 16. Can Ruben Tarangi and Cam Glidden bounce back? And is the key word here. I'm going to take the question as written and joins them both. Can they both bounce back simultaneously? My answer is no. Tarangi, perhaps. I thought he just lost confidence. Whereas Glidden, I'm not so sure. So the idea that both of them are going to bounce back? No, I don't think so. I just criticized Andre Lemanis a wee bit before, but he's not a bad coach. In fact, he's a very good one. He didn't submarine either of these guys' year. The two of these guys did that. I don't think Lemanis is a guy who holds a grudge. If you're good, he'll play you. They couldn't play over Singlet nor Braun, and that's on them. That's not on Lemanis. It's not on situation. And, you know, people say, oh, they recruited over the top of them. If you're a good player, you cannot be recruited over the top of. You can't. And you know, if you're going to put this on Sobey and say, oh, Sobey's not a point guard, he didn't set it up for him, you know, how many excuses are we going to make for people? You know, we've all got excuses. Excuses help everybody sleep at night, but, yeah, they don't taste good. I don't feed them to me. Also, I think injuries are a much bigger part of this story than either side wants to admit, and that's particularly Glidden. I think he looked really, that back seemed to really be hampering him, and so, you know, that's a worry. Question number 17 from Leon Santa Maria's Expect the Unexpected expanded episode. Is Mitch McCarron the man for the job? I think he's certainly the man under the circumstance, but ultimately, no again. I think, not because he's a bad player, not because he'd make a bad one, but I think he's just a natural two. And that's not a slight on Mitch McCarron at all. He's a natural two in the same way that Sobey is, Nathan Sobey. And if Golding wasn't on that United team, he'd play that role. You know, let's not forget that this is a team that made the finals and lost to a really strong Perth Wildcats in NBL 19 with McCarron starting at his more natural two spot. As I said, under the circumstances, he's going to have to do that. But no, it's not his natural spot. You know, you're asking someone to take on a burden that isn't theirs. It's kind of like Dr. Phil. Don't ask a child to take on an adult's burden. Not that McCarron's a child and this is an adult burden, but you're asking a guy, a leopard, to change its spots. Not ideal. And, you know, people are what they are. I do hate, having said all that, now that we're talking two and point guard, I do hate talking about positions. But, and when I say the one and the two, what I really mean to say is I prefer him with more freedom in the open court. I prefer it when he's catching it at half court or catching it at quarter court and looking to finish rather than being the guy to take it out of the net and bring it up and pass it off to someone else. I just don't think that's natural for him. And I think he's better suited. I think that team is better for it if he's doing that. And so for that answer is no. Question number 18, will the Breakers play at home? My answer is no. I feel like I've been a bit negative in answering no to all these, but this pandemic just seems to linger on, and the safe bet is that the pandemic will be unpredictable, and therefore, in the absence of, you know, absolute certainty, governments have shown themselves to be really protectionist, and so therefore no. Question 19. After suffering avocado hand, what will happen next involving Corey Webster? Good question. Before I answer it, I'll give a little clarification. Let's not forget that last season was really strange for Corey Webster too. This is now a second off-season that's peculiar. And strange for two reasons. Number one, the Breakers were poor to start the year when they had him, or the season to start when they had him. Now, also, Hampton was starting at the one, which may or may not have been a much greater contributing factor to that poor start. But also, too, they were unbelievable in his absence due to that weird situation in which at the start of the year he wanted out to play in Turkey and then got loaned off to China. How in any way is this healthy? You know, I don't, it was a really strange thing. It was never really looked into. Why did they just farm him off to another team? I think that's a huge part of the reason why they've shifted from Hobson to Patterson, who was a much more natural fit alongside Corey Webster. So the Breakers' commitment to Tory Webster, the Breakers' commitment to Corey Webster has been really good. You know, they have shifted their roster to accommodate him. But looking to NBL 21, I mean, he's going to miss a decent chunk of time to start the season. Really formative time for this team. A team that has already been compromised with, you know, Lamar Patterson just getting out of quarantine now from Puerto Rico, I believe. So, you know, you're already compromised in a turbulent, fast-paced preseason and start to the year. You don't want to start the season with a bad record. And they're looking like they're on track to kind of do that. Or at least they're starting to build their foundation that's only going to be torn down when he returns. Not ideal. And also, don't forget, when Dan Shamir finds a winning combination, he won't budge. You know, last year they had Deng Adel, didn't play a minute. They had Hampton starting. He didn't like it. He took him out. Hampton didn't see the court, barely saw the court again. And he would have had Rod Hampton screaming at him. And he would have said, no, we don't win with him. I'm not playing him. You know, that's just how he is. And to his full credit, that's how he is. And they won and he backed himself. But just quietly also on this team, and this is not about Corey Webster on this team, but just quietly, this team looked really good when Brandon Ashley was on the floor, as they did with Rob Lowe. Brandon Ashley, an athletic, long, big, and Rob Lowe, a pick and pop big. Colton Iverson is their import. He's presumably going to start and play. He's not that type of big. Just saying. But let's move on. So my answer to that is, what will happen? I think he's going to miss time. They're going to lose games as a result because the mix is off. And then when he returns, it's a, you know, it's a cock amongst the hen house, and that's not ideal. Question number 20. Speaking of the Websters, will Corey's bro be as good as advertised? We're talking about Ty Webster here. Dissecting the question again. As advertised, well, I haven't really seen a heck of a lot of advertising for Ty Webster. I've seen some, and he's got good pedigree, and you know, there's some expectations, but you know, none like the expectations of, you know, Vic Law. You know, there's been articles about everyone saying, oh, he's really good, and you know, about Josh Giddey and Mojave King, there's been talk about them, and Melbourne United and Jock Landau. You know, these guys are heavily advertised. Ty Webster, I think, because he signed during a time that was, well, he signed a long time ago. I think he signed during a lull, whereas the guys who have signed later in the year and the guys who have shown up in the preseason have got most of the advertisement. But, you know, to talk about Ty Webster, he's got great pedigree coming from the EuroLeague and Galatasaray, and looked great against Nathan Sobey at the, you know, Asian Cup thing where New Zealand played Australia. Will Weaver coached and Australia committed 1,000 turnovers and lost. So, yeah, I think it'd be really good. I think it'd be really, really good. You know, EuroLeague players with pedigree typically are. And, you know, Sek Henry was good under Shamir. And so, you know, Shamir's not a guy, you know, a guy who lets point guards play with a bit of freedom, shoot and score. So, yeah, I think Ty Webster's going to be good. And now we come to the last question of Liam Santamaria's Expect the Unexpected article. It's on nbl.com.au. I encourage everybody to read it and his answers to his own questions. And the last one is, who will win the inaugural NBL Cup? Now, Santa doesn't give an answer himself. That's fine. So when dissecting the question, what's important when winning the NBL Cup? I think it's talent, first and foremost, and then it's who can back up game to game and who's going to be focused game to game. Who's going to have the best game to game game plan? I said game a lot in that sense. Your home court matters. So for that reason, Melbourne are a contention. They're going to have home court. They're going to be the only team presumably sleeping in their own bed, or at least at the very least at their own city. These things help. Plus, they've got McCarron, Hobson, and Landau. They can all go. They've got two guys in their starting five who might find it hard to get up for back-to-backs and things like that, and that's Golding and, in particular, Barlow. Golding I'm not so worried about, but still, he's not on the likes of the motor of McCarron, Hobson, and Landau. So they're a good candidate. Perth are naturally a good candidate. Where they lack in, perhaps, talent compared to Melbourne United, what they excel at is game-to-game game plan. If you can follow along, I think they're the team that's going to be most focused. Back-to-backs won't worry them. I don't think living in the bubble is going to worry them. And we saw where teams in the NBA bubble had great success when they were hungry and relatively young. And that's Perth. I mean, Perth are really young. Norton under 30, I think. Cotton under 30. Blanchfield floating with 30. Mooney 24, 25. And then you know, whoever else they've got, the big drink of Travers. So they're going to be a young team. As much as they're a championship team, they're a young team. So they're going to be able to go back to back. They're going to be focused. They've got Trevor Gleeson. Gleeson doesn't take a second off. It's nauseatingly commendable, his commitment to being everywhere at all times. So they're a real candidate as well. Sydney are the other option I have. And why do I say that? They have Casper Ware. You know, this NBL Cup is basically the Drew League in miniature. And, you know, he's a Drew League kind of guy. And I don't think the bubble's going to phase him. And I think he gets the best out of everyone around him. He's a great defender. He's a great scoring player, you know. Southeast Melbourne is another option. Home court, obviously, they've got it in spades. And then they've got, again, guys with good motor. Sykes has got good motor. He's going to play hard. Mitch Creek, in particular, he's going to look to shoot and score and be aggressive every game, whether they've played that morning, that night, that evening, on the moon. Doesn't matter to him. He's going to play hard. And then Ben Moore seems to be a similar way. So they're my three options. But I just don't like the rest of that Southeast Melbourne roster to do the same. So I'm not going to pick them. Going back to Sydney, though, you know, they're only allowed 20. And here's the other thing with Sydney. Ooh, contentious point. They're saying that in the NBL Cup, you're only allowed 20 people through the door. I think this Sydney team's going to actually benefit from that. They're going to have their, you know, 12 players, whoever they are, Ford, an assistant coach, a couple other coaches. So now we're, you know, encroaching on near 20. And I think the main important thing for Sydney is I think their management team's not going to attend. And then the players are actually going to be left to play their own game and find their own voice. And if you've heard the Trash Talk podcast with Felix von Hoff and Pete Hawley, yeah, I think they articulated this quite well. It's important for players to actually have ownership of their own team. And I think less is more. I think that in a big way, less is more. Your coach and your players matter most. Put them front and center, not your Twitter handle. And I think that's I think they're actually going to benefit from that. So I think they're the three teams I'd pick. And if I had to pick one, I'd probably go with Melbourne. The two H's, Hobson and home court. That's my answer. All right, everyone. That's all I have for you. I actually recorded an interview with Body yesterday. We spoke about Marvelous. There are copies for sale. The link is in the description if you're interested in that. It's a beautiful read and should really help. People form their thoughts on this. And so when you're on Twitter or Facebook or whatever you're doing, you're a little bit more educated on what you're saying and how you say it. It is a beautifully written book and a beautiful story. So that's coming up soon. I'm hoping to get other guests on. We'll do a big season preview of all the teams, everything that's going on, and hopefully get some nice guests. There's some really great stuff out there, and I'm thankful that you're taking the time to listen to this, considering that, you know, the Basketball Blokes are doing a great podcast with Liam Santa Maria most recently. That was great. I love that. Trash Talk is back. That's fantastic. You know, some really great stuff. But thank you for coming along. And hope you sat and thought. And don't worry about my answers. What are yours? Get on Twitter at NBL Pocket Pod. I'd love to hear them. Thanks very much. Bye.